You're listening to the Nachum Segal Network, and welcome to this special edition of By the Book, brought to you by our friends at Koren Publishers. Check out korenpub.com, korenpub.com. Today is Yom HaAtzma'ut. Today is Israel's Independence Day, as we wish the State of Israel a happy 66th birthday and celebrate this amazing and incredible day around the world. Every year on Yom HaAtzma'ut, there is a state ceremony in the presence of the Prime Minister and the Speaker of the Knesset. This year, among the recipients in the is the Torah luminary, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion. The award committee commented that his multifaceted work is characterized by its depth, scope, well-developed logic, sharp intellect, sensitivity, and imagination. Rabbi Lichtenstein's work encompasses the entire realm of Torah study, Bible, Mishnah, Talmud, Halacha, Midrash, Halachic literature, and the rulings of the early and latter Halachic authorities. His work reflects an exceptional combination of knowledge of all aspects of the Torah and a depth of theoretical Talmudic thinking, incorporating original and creative thought while adapting to Israeli public life and dealing with the challenges of time and space. Magid Books has been partnering with Yeshivat Har Etzion on a number of projects, including the acclaimed series Torah Mietzion. The fifth volume on Bamidbar will be available within the next few weeks. The uniqueness of Torah Mietzion, what sets it apart from other traditional yeshivot, is the belief that serious Torah study encompasses not only Talmud, but Tanakh and Machshava as well. It has been said that the series, quote, resurrected and revolutionized the study of Torah. Rabbi Reuven Ziegler is with us via telephone. He is chairman of the Koren Editorial Board and a close disciple of both Rav Yehuda Amital and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. He is founder of Yeshivat Har Etzion's Israel Kashitsky Virtual Beit Midrash and is an expert in the life and thought of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Rabbi Reuven Ziegler, Chag Sameach to you and welcome to the Nachum Segal Network.
Chag Sameach, thank you very much.
There is something amazing and incredible about Rabbi Lichtenstein, and we had an opportunity to discuss his career, his unbelievable contribution to the world of Torah scholarship when we spoke in depth about Rav Amital and his founding of Yeshivat Har Etzion. One of the unique things about him, and obviously you have to say this about Rav Amital of blessed memory as well, is that the two of them together were able to synthesize their talents and create what is today this unbelievable juggernaut of Torah of Yeshivat Har Etzion. How do you view the relationship that the two of them had during Rav Amital's life?
This is perhaps one of the most incredible stories to come out of the yeshiva world. I mean, here you have two individuals. I'll just describe them very briefly. Rav Amital was born in Hungary, Holocaust survivor, came to Israel right after the Shoah, fought in the War of Independence. He had basically no secular education. He grew up in the yeshiva world. He was the founder of the Yeshivat Hezder, a very, you know, European and Israeli figure, very much imbued with the Torah of Rav Kook, and also very much into Hasidut. He was one of the first people who brought Hasidut into the religious Zionist world. And he founded the yeshiva, and he was the Rosh Yeshiva of this young yeshiva that attracted some of the best students of the day, many of whom are today themselves Rosh Yeshiva.
Right.
And after he founded the yeshiva, he's the sole head of the yeshiva, he said, I want to bring to this yeshiva the greatest, most powerful lamdan I can find, and I'm going to turn the yeshiva over to him. And he looked the world over to find the top Talmid Chacham that he could find, and he found him in distant America, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, completely different person in personality and background. For Lichtenstein, although he was born in Europe, he grew up in America. He has a PhD in English literature from Harvard. He's not a person of Rav Kook and Hasidut. He's one of the leading disciples and the son-in-law of Joseph Soloveitchik. And he was, at the time, Rosh Kolo and Rebbe at Yeshiva University. And he invited him to head the yeshiva. And he invited him to head the yeshiva instead of himself. Rav Amital said, I'll step down. You'll be the head of the yeshiva. Rav Lichtenstein came to Israel, visited. He wanted to make Aliyah very much. And when he was offered a couple of places to be Rosh Yeshiva, because, you know, a Talmid Chacham of his stature, really world-class, a Talmid Chacham, and Rav Amital, I have to say, was no slouch whatsoever. But when he met Rav Amital, when he saw the yeshiva, he was totally taken by it. And he agreed to come on one condition, that Rav Amital would not step down, and that there would be co-Rashi yeshiva. And now, usually to have two heads of an institution is a recipe for disaster, because they have different viewpoints, they're going to end up fighting, they're going to end up pulling it in different directions. But the two of them, despite all their differences, had certain elements that they both believed in, that they had such mutual respect and admiration and friendship, that even when they disagreed, they found a way of dealing with it harmoniously. And I think that it was the combination of these two very different, powerful personalities that made the yeshiva into what it is. And perhaps the greatest lesson that we, the students of the yeshiva, got was just watching the interaction of these two gedolim.
It's
how they...
Yeah, I was going to say, we often use the expression, you know, the sum being greater than the total of its parts, or the total being greater than the sum of its parts. I think in this case, that is exactly right. And imagine with two parts being this distinct and this powerful coming together, and the total yet being even greater than the two combined. You're talking about an absolute force in the world of the yeshiva. And I wonder what, you know, often people say, if you want something done, do it yourself. If you don't want it done, form a committee. And I wonder what other yeshivas, right and left, think when they see the history of Yeshivat HaRetzion and they realize that this committee achieved what they likely would not have been able to achieve separately.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, there had been precedents of two Rashi yeshiva at the head of the yeshiva, but always it was the result of some compromise. There was a clash, like, you know, the previous Rashi yeshiva's son and son-in-law both wanted to succeed him, so they came with some sort of compromise, and then it always ended up with, you know, conflict, and yeshiva often split into two. And, I mean, it's even happening today in the yeshiva world in various places. But after a couple of years and people saw this model, a whole bunch of yeshivas adopted this model of let's have two Rashi yeshiva milchatchila. Let's try to bring two different people and try to get them to, you know, interact. I know a bunch of yeshivas have done this. For example, Yeshivat Otniel does this, and now in Yeshivat Petach Tikva. And there are quite a few others, and they've said that they're specifically modeling it on the HaRetzion model.
Amazing. It became a real trailblazer in the terms of how yeshivas operate. And you've just given us the proof. Rabbi Reuven Ziegler is with us, chairman of the Koren Editorial Board, and many other distinctions. We'll try to get to all of them in this conversation. So Rav Lichtenstein's actual Pras Yisrael, the Israel Prize, is officially in literature, right? That would be the category?
In Torah literature.
Although
he does have a doctorate in English literature, but that's not what he's getting the Israel Prize for.
Right, I guess when they say literature in Israel, I guess they're referring to the literature of our people, and that would be Torah literature. I could only imagine, I don't even know if you know this or not, but it's such a timely question because of the day on which we're speaking and because of this distinction that's been awarded him. Would you know his reaction to this? I would assume with the very little knowledge I have of him, but what I've been told, I would seem that he might be somewhat uncomfortable with this distinction.
Well, yes, you're correct that he's a very humble person, and he's not, you know, he's a really living embodiment of, you know, whoever flees from honor, honor will chase him.
Right.
So he's a person who flees from honor, but somehow it chases him. I did go to his house the day after he received the award and to wish him Mazel Tov. And he was moved that the state of Israel recognized what he does as being worthy of a prize. He said he's very, I think he was proud of the state of Israel, that the state of Israel considers Torah scholarship something worthy of a national prize on Yom HaTzmaut.
Mm.
And that moved him greatly, that, you know, he had come to Israel, you know, young immigrant with a young family, and now he was being awarded the highest honor. He said, it's not an award for me. It's an award for, you know, all the people involved in the yeshiva and in everything I've done. It's an award for all of us, but he was so pleased that the state of Israel considered it important.
Wow, and what an important point you're making, and especially these days when there's questions about the state of Israel and its official policy toward Torah, if you will, and we often like to point that, as many others do, that the State of Israel is the greatest funder of Torah education in the history of the world, and that unfortunately is lost on many. It's such an important and significant act that they're going ahead and honoring someone like Rav Lichtenstein. Many people, those who are skeptical sometimes about the attitude of the State of Israel toward Torah, and maybe sometimes it is justified, I don't know, should keep this in mind, that this is how they're spending their Yom HaAtzmaut.
Right, yeah. And as you said, the entire, all the dignitaries of the state, from the president to, you know, to the prime minister, to the chief justice of the Supreme Court and the speaker of the Knesset, they're all going to be there to honor, you know, these great scholars in various fields, including the field of Torah literature.
Rabbi Reuven Ziegler is with us, chairman of the Koren Editorial Board, disciple of both Rav Yehuda Amital and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. He's founder of Yeshivat Haratzion's Israel Kashitsky Virtual Beit Midrash, an expert in the life and thought of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Our friends at Koren Publishers bring you this segment on a regular basis, and of course today we are celebrating Yom HaAtzmaut, and leave it to our friends at Koren to announce that there is a sale for Yom HaAtzmaut of up to 66% savings on their entire website until Wednesday, May the 7th, so make sure to make good on that offer. I should say take advantage of that offer while supplies last. They're discounting the entire site, including the Koren Talmud Bavli, the Sack Sitter, all Magid books and more. Go to KorenPub.com. And you could relive history with the amazing work of Ambassador Yehuda Avner, purchase the Prime Minister's The Intimate Narrative of Israeli Leadership by Yehuda Avner for just $19.48. How do you like that? Free shipping. Yeah, that's right. Those who want to save money wish that Israel was founded even earlier. 1948, and there's information about their raffle on their Facebook page. Check it out at Koren's page on Facebook. Rabbi Ziegler, the brand-new Torah Mi'etzion is just weeks away, that meaning the volume on Bamidbar, correct?
Yes.
And Bamidbar usually is the parsha before the holiday of Shavuos. This year it'll be both Bamidbar and Nusso before the holiday of Shavuos because of the way the calendar falls out. Torah Mi'etzion is the works of the rabbis of Yeshivat HaRetzion. And if there's one thing that your yeshiva, and I should say Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein's yeshiva, has given the Torah world and the Jewish world in general, it is an incredible contribution to the world of Torah scholarship. And I hit on this when I made the opening comments regarding Yeshivat HaRetzion, that they've gone ahead and they've taken serious Torah study, and they've gone ahead and used that not only for Talmud but for Tanakh and Machshava as well. These series, as I quoted earlier, resurrected and revolutionized the study of Torah. What can you tell us about what goes in to this series? I know you obviously look for certain people to present on the Parshios, and you're looking for, I guess, a certain scholarship or level of analysis of the Parshios. What makes Torah Mi'etzion different from other publications that go through the Parshios of the Torah?
Well, first I just want to point out that even though the book is called Torah Mi'etzion, the book is in English, not in Hebrew.
Right.
So all your listeners should know that. I can tell you the reactions to this series have been off the charts. I mean, people have said basically along the following lines. I have heard Parshat HaShavua laned, you know, every year for the past, whatever, 20, 30, 40 years, and I've listened to it. And now I read this, and I just, it's opened my eyes. I'm seeing things that were there all along that I never noticed. And I'm seeing word patterns, I'm seeing structures, I'm seeing that the Parsha has a certain structure, or I'm seeing that one thing is paralleling another thing. And suddenly they said, I can't believe that I missed this all along. So what the series is trying to do is, and this was something that was very important both to Rav Amital and to Rav Lichtenstein, they each came to it from their own direction. Rav Amital believed, you know, now that the State of Israel has been recreated and we've returned to the land of the Tanakh, and the Tanakh is really the bedrock of Judaism, we have to return to study it seriously. And Rav Lichtenstein, with his background in the study of literature, you know, believed that we should apply the techniques of literary study also to the Tanakh, and that can yield tremendous fruit. And Rav Lichtenstein also, with his very delicate literary psychological sensitivity, both of them would, in their weekly talks, would draw, you know, very deep portraits of the different characters of Tanakh. So this is something that both of them brought to the yeshiva. But really, over the course of the past 40 years, the yeshiva and its affiliated Herzog College have developed a certain methodology. Rabbi Shalom Carmi of YU labeled it the literary theological method, which I think is a good, which is a good way of encapsulating it, because it takes note of literary phenomena in the Tanakh. Let's say you have words that are repeated. What does it mean when you have a certain word that appears seven times, or you have a certain word that runs throughout the parsha that's always used one way and is the one time used a different way? That tells you something. Or what's the structure of a chumash? What's the structure of a parsha? What's the structure of a story? Sometimes you'll see these things are set up in a parallel, like A, B, B, A. And then once you see the structure of it, suddenly that sheds new light on it. But it's not just to note literary phenomena. It's also to see what's the meaning, what's the religious meaning of this, what's it trying to tell us, because the Tanakh is not just a work of literature. The Tanakh is Dvar Hashem that's trying to teach us something. So you can, and Chazal, we're sensitive to all these same things. We sometimes lose track when we're reading Rashi or when we're reading Medrash that the Tanakh is, that the Medrash is basing a lot of its comments on noting these literary phenomena. So, you know, it's not like we're discovering this for the first time. We're sort of returning to a way that Chazal read it in the Medrash, and trying to uncover its meaning for us today. There's also an additional element that some people like Rabbi Yoel Binun and others have introduced, which is now that we're back in the land of Tanakh, we know that, for example, the Ramban, he wrote his commentary on the Torah when he lived in Spain. And then at the end of his life, he made Aliyah. And then he said, oh my gosh, he made a whole bunch of changes. He said, I never realized the distance between, you know, Hebron and Yerushalayim, or the distance from, you know, Hebron to Mitzrayim. And when he was in Israel, he discovered a shekel, an ancient shekel. He said, now I know what it looks like, how much it weighs, etc. So the Ramban actually made, the truth is we knew recently, he says a couple of times, and after I came to Israel, and I realized X or Y or Z, that I changed this. But there were actually two scholars from Herzog College who just now published a book, Professor Yossi Ofer and Dr. Yonatan Yaakov, where they compared manuscripts of the Ramban that he wrote in Spain and then manuscripts from the time he was in Israel. And they found, I think, 600 changes that he made, most of which hadn't been known.
So Torah Metzion, aside from its name... Aside from its name, Torah Metzion would be a lot different if it was just the Tanakh scholarship and did not have the geographical base that it has.
Right. So following in the footsteps of the Ramban, you know, we learned that once you're back in Israel, then you have to re-examine these parshiot and to try to see where it happened, what happened, and how that reveals, you know, what that reveals about the story itself. So that's something, the reality aspect of it, the Eretz Yisrael aspect of it, was very much inculcated by Rabbi Yoel Binun.
Right.
So this series, I think, I think it's revolutionary, and I know it's been adopted by many schools. They're teaching using it, and I can't tell you how many people say that, you know, they take their Divrei Torah every week from there.
Oh, it's unbelievable, and I see that the one on Bamidbar is going to be over 500 pages, I believe.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot to say. Each one of them is about 500 pages.
How does one decide who gets included in a work like this? I mean, need the editors look for people not only with the Torah scholarship that you described and the Tanakh scholarship that you described, but also, you know, elements of Etzion, elements of that region of the country or region of the world, as you just described as well?
Well, this series, Torah Me'etzion, originated in Yeshivat Har Etzion.
Right.
So basically, all the people who write for it are affiliated in one way or another with Yeshivat Har Etzion.
So all these familiar names are Har Etzion, or what some people would call Gush people.
Yes, all of them are. Although what's interesting is that it also includes some female writers,
right?
Because there are some women who studied or who taught at Yeshivat Har Etzion's affiliated women's institution in Migdal Oz, and there are female teachers in Herzog College. So it's not just the rabbis of Yeshivat Har Etzion, but you know, the question is not who to include. The question is who to exclude, because there's so much talent here, and there are so many people who write at such a high level, and such interesting and new and innovative Torah, you know, it's just hard to pick which pieces to put in, because there's so much good stuff, so much creativity going on here.
Well, that's
and that's another thing that both Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital emphasize, the importance of creativity, not just repeating the same old thing.
Well, that's part of my point, is the roster of people that you have at your disposal is unbelievable. And we're talking about some of the absolute top names when it comes to Torah scholarship and people that you know, have gained tremendous worldwide popularity, both through their writings and their lectures. And obviously, many of them are included in this work. Rabbi Reuven Ziegler is with us. We are celebrating Yom HaAtzmaut and pointing out that Rav Lichtenstein is being presented with Pras Yisrael on this 66th birthday of the State of Israel in the area of a Torah literature, and it is quite a distinction. We're also mentioning that the Torah Me'etzion volume on Bamidbar is about to be released, and I thank our friends from Koren Publishers for making these conversations possible and spreading the word of Torah, especially Torah Me'etzion, around the world. Rabbi Ziegler, do you get an opportunity to work with these same people that would be included in volumes like these with the virtual Beit Midrash? Are there a lot of Gush or Haaretzion rabbis who are included in what you do on the web?
Yes. You know, you happen to say two things together, but I think they're connected. You said that there's this real embarrassment of riches of all these great scholars at the disposal at you know, at our disposal to, in the Torah Me'etzion volumes, and the question is who to pick because there's so many good scholars that are available. And you also mentioned that Rav Lichtenstein won Pras Yisrael and Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital started an institution. But I think the two things are completely connected. In other words, you had these two true giants. I mean, I'm a critical person, and these two people were just so impressive, were just so astonishing to me when I met them. You had these two true giants, Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital. And they created this institution together, which you said accurately, it was greater than the sum of its parts. So it naturally attracted to itself a huge pool of talent. So Yeshivat HaRetzion was sort of a magnet for some of the most talented people, which is, and therefore it's no coincidence that the virtual Beit Midrash and the Torah Me'etzion series has all these really wonderful scholars. They were all attracted by the opportunity to study at the feet of these two giants.
It is amazing. And by the way, I am remiss for not earlier asking in this conversation about the health of Rav Lichtenstein. I know there are people listening who have heard that he's had his ups and downs recently. What can you tell us?
Well, you know, he's almost 81. I can tell you this. Until about the age of 70, he had the strength of three people. It was unbelievable to see him in action. He was like a sheer machine. He had no... There were no limits. You never saw him walking. I mean, when I was in his shir, when he was in his 60s, when he was in his 50s, when he was in his 60s, when he was about 70, you never saw him walking through the halls. He would always run. He would be carrying all his books under his arm. He'd take the stairs to the Beis Medrash three at a time. He would eat lunch in 3 minutes because he was always giving shir. He had this tremendous, tremendous koach, and 100% of it, maybe 110% of it, was devoted to one goal of Avodas Hashem, of serving God and in using every ounce of his energy. And he would sometimes, I remember that he would go to America sometimes, let's say, to interview students. And he would miss shiur for 3 days, 4 days. He'd come back straight from the airport, and then he would make up all those shiurim back to back. He would just teach 8 hours straight, four different masechtas. I remember my first year in yeshiva, he was teaching five different masechtas and different framework from five different sedarim. And these are shirim at the highest level to students who you can't come and give a half-baked shir to them. They know what they're doing. These are students fifth, sixth, seventh year of Beis Medrash, and he would just come and just give 8 hours of shir straight from the airport. And only then would he go home. So after that, in his 70s, his health began, you know, to for the first time. I don't think he was sick a day in his life before that. But then, you know, his age caught up with him, and now he's already semi-retired from the yeshiva. But you know, he still is very involved. He comes a lot, speaks to the students. I was just there last week he didn't just meet the students, he came for a Yom Bar Mitzvah, where alumni came with their Bar Mitzvah age sons. They also have a Yom Bat Mitzvah. And he came and he met every one of the boys, every one of the Bar Mitzvah boys, and chatted with them. So, thank God, he still has the ability to be involved in the yeshiva.
Was it unusual for first year American students to attend his shir?
Students would come from America, and you know they would come for 1 year. And to say you came 6,000 miles, you're coming for 1 year, even though Rav Lichtenstein officially gave the fourth or fifth year shir, and then he gave higher level shirim, couldn't really deny them the privilege of going to Rav Lichtenstein. So way back when I was a student, so sometimes like towards the end of the first year, they would let the American students in for a couple of months, even though officially it wasn't an 18-year-old shir, it was a 22-year-old shir.
Right.
Over the years, they got stricter about that. And, you know, you could only get into the shir in Shana Bet or whatever. He gave, I'll just tell you a funny story. I have a friend who's a professor now in America, and Rav Lichtenstein used to give, among his many shirim, he gave a regular shir yomi, which was to the fourth and fifth year students, who were, like 21, 22. And then after you'd been in his shir for 2-3 years, you could go to his chabura. And there, 2 out of every 3 shirim he would give, and the third one, one of the guys would give.
Right.
Now, to give a chabura in front of Rav Lichtenstein, he's a very nice person, but you're standing there in front of a world-class Talmid Chacham. You have got to give a top-notch shir. And people would, prepare. And after the shir, he would give you a critique, a half-hour critique of your shir.
Wow.
And again, done very nicely, very kindly. I'll tell you what was unique about it in a moment, but I have a friend who tells me, he says, I've spoken at graduate seminars, I've given lectures at universities. He said, nothing scares me, because I gave a chabur in front of Rav Lichtenstein. And if I could do that, nothing else is frightening to me. What was most interesting about his critique of the chabura was that for the first 15, he would give a half-hour critique. The first 15 minutes, he wouldn't talk about what you actually said about, how you read the Tosfot, was it convincing or not or whatever. First, he would say, okay, so you structured your shir this way. Here's another way you could have structured it. What's the advantage of each way?
Right.
And he would give pedagogical points about how to teach, how to organize, you mentioned a Rashba to support your point. You should have noted that Rashi disagrees with him. You don't have to go into it, but you always have to present the full picture. And then he would give, an actual 15-minute critique of what you said, how could you read the Gemara here without relating to the Gemara there? But, he has this amazing pedagogical ability. It's not just that he's a Talmid Chacham, and not just that he's a master of rabbinic literature, and not just Gemara. All the Rishonim, obscure Rishonim that people have never heard of, he's mastered it all. He can conceptualize it. He's creative. He can place it into a bigger framework. But not only that, he can give it over in a crystal clear way. And with such organization, with such structure, there was a year where I gave a review shir for his shir, and to some of the younger students, and it was so easy to prepare because the shir was so organized. I would just look at my notes, and there it was. It was like 1, 2, A, B, and it was perfect. And at the end, he would even give a 5-minute summary where he would review all the points. So that's another thing that we got from him. Maybe it's part of his literary sensibility, but his attention not just to content, but the structure and the presentation, the organization. It's really a tremendous thing.
So being a Baal Masbir is the key, being able to describe, being able to transmit in an organized fashion. He was simply the best at it, or is simply the best at it.
Yes, yes.
I was going to ask a little bit of a funny question, but you talk about the fear that one has in presenting in front of Rav Lichtenstein, which is understood, but that's more self-imposed than the fear that one felt near his father-in-law, correct? The Rav had more.
Oh, completely. Yeah, the Rav was very intimidating. I mean, certainly in his earlier years.
And do you think purposefully, or that was, simply a result of how he grew up and the type of, Torah tradition that he had?
I think that part of it was his Lithuanian upbringing, and part of it is the upbringing that he had had in his particular family. But I think also it was a moral issue, because and this I heard at his shloshim, his son, Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, spoke and said had some really, really wonderful insights. So one of the things he said was that for the Rav, he felt that if people were, you know, not giving good answers, it meant that they hadn't applied themselves. It meant that they hadn't prepared properly. Why hadn't they prepared properly? Because they didn't care enough. You know, he would say, how could you explain the Gemara that way? He said, this Gemara, I couldn't figure it out. I stayed up till 3 a.m. because I couldn't sleep because it was bothering me. And you read it and you moved on. And so for him, he would get angry because there was a moral issue involved. If you're lackadaisical in class, it means you don't care about Torah. Rav Lichtenstein by nature is a much more tolerant, moderate person, a much more harmonious personality than Rav Soloveitchik. So you're right. The fear was totally self-imposed because he would never make you feel, you know, he would never yell at anyone or never, chas v'shalom.
And was their relationship out of the ordinary? Was it, you know, either one way or the other? I'm sure it wasn't a typical father-in-law, son-in-law relationship, but would you describe it essentially as, you know, one of great respect and really not off the charts in either direction?
Well, I mean, for Lichtenstein towards Rav Soloveitchik, I mean, he was his mentor and his master, and he recognized that his father-in-law was not just a father-in-law, he was the Gadol Hador, and he was a master of Torah. So Rav Lichtenstein, you know, still speaks of Rav Soloveitchik with the highest regard and admiration and awe. But Rav Soloveitchik also recognized that when he had this young student in his class, he said, there's something special about this boy, because not only is he an astonishing Talmid Chacham for such a young person, but he also is a person of sterling personal qualities. And I believe it was Rav Soloveitchik who was really, when he recognized what a gem he had in his classroom, he was the one who wanted to introduce Rav Lichtenstein to his daughter.
Right.
You know, he didn't tell her, here's your shidduch, okay, mazel tov.
Right.
He said, I want you to meet this boy. And that's about it.
So, and not to take anything away from Rav Amital, God forbid, but to say that the Rav has a significant imprint on Yeshivat Har Etzion, that would be somewhat of an accurate statement.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
His style of study, his transmission, the way that the students of Har Etzion transmit to the public, you know, their Divrei Torah, there's a lot of the Rav in there.
Yes, and both in terms of the general worldview and philosophy, and also in terms of the way of studying Gemara. I mean, Rav Soloveitchik was in his day the premier exponent of the Brisker Derech, of the Brisker approach to studying Gemara, which he had gotten from his father and from his grandfather who started this whole method, Rav Chaim of Brisk. Rav Soloveitchik made his own contributions to the method, and brought it to far greater circles. And Rav Lichtenstein also made his own contributions. He's not just teaching exactly the way he heard things from Rav Soloveitchik.
Right.
He also had a tremendous contribution. In fact, I think that Rav Lichtenstein, you could define, and I'll just mention here parenthetically, that just last week, a very important book, Hamagid had the tremendous honor to publish Rav Lichtenstein's collected articles on Gemara.
Right.
The book is called Minchat Aviv. It's hot off the press. 36 articles that he wrote, you know, over the course of the year, spanning the entire gamut of the Talmud, and, you know, really the most polished, beautiful form of the Brisker Derech. I mean, each piece is a gem of scholarship. It's not for, you know, beginners,
right.
That's for sure. Now, Rav Lichtenstein's contribution was that he took this method, which, you know, for lack of time, I won't go into explaining what the whole Brisker method is, but, you know, it's conceptualizing the Gemara. We won't get into it now, but he took this method and he made it into something that not just geniuses like Zaleev could apply, but he made it into a methodology that anyone could apply with proper training.
Right.
He would look, very often people look at a Gemara or look at a Rambam, and if they have a question on it, then they'll come up with an answer. They'll come up with some two dinim, they'll come up with some distinction to explain why the Rambam says this here and that there. But it's only when you have a question. Rav Lichtenstein doesn't start with a question. He starts by saying, okay, here's the issue. Let's try to characterize the issue. Let's try to map out all the possibilities before we've even seen any of the commentaries. And once you've mapped everything out conceptually, then when you read the commentaries, you're much more sensitive to what you're looking for. And then you can find the different opinions because you've been sensitized to what to look for. And it's really an astonishing thing. Rav Lichtenstein taught, I don't know of any other Rosh Yeshiva, maybe there is someone out there, who gave for 30 years a class in methodology of Torah study. He didn't just give a class in Bava Kama and Bava Metzia and whatever, but he would teach the students. He had this unbelievable methodological self-awareness where he can convey it, and he can say, okay, when you come to this kind of question, what should you be asking? And then the students get used to it and say, oh, okay, there's two ways to approach this. And he's conveyed it in such a way that even young 18-year-old students with not great backgrounds can apply this methodology that until then could only be applied by, huge Talmidei Chachamim like the Rav or the Belvel, his uncle, or whoever. So I think that that's also a tremendous contribution that Rav Lichtenstein has made.
And by the way, and not to minimize it by joking about it, but I'm sure that methodology also seeps out of the Torah world and goes into when you're analyzing English literature and when you're analyzing other subjects. I mean, I'm joking as I say this, but I remember I remember people in a kidding fashion using a brisker approach of how the sport of bowling is scored. You know what I mean? Like it ends up seeping into regular life as well.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I think here it's worth noting that Rav Lichtenstein's Israel Prize is not just for his Talmudic scholarship, as tremendous as it is, but also for his contributions to Jewish thought.
Right.
And he really is, his Talmud scholarship is maybe something for people with a stronger background, but anyone can read his works of Jewish thought. They're magisterial. He has, and you're right, it's the same methodology that he's using. The same plurality of approaches, the same openness to a variety of things. He's trying to open possibilities and not to limit possibilities. And it even comes through in his educational philosophy. He's not trying to tell people, be one way, be like me. Not trying to impose himself. He's really has a deep sense of humanism in that he believes in his students. He believes in people. He thinks people should be thinking for themselves. They should be encouraged to. This is something that he shared with Rav Amital, coming from a different direction, which is what made it so powerful. Neither of them wanted to impose themselves on their students and to say, this is the one way to do things. Both of them would draw, if a student would come for advice, if you would come with a specific halachic shayla about, can I do etz on Shabbos? So usually they wouldn't just say yes or no. They'd say, okay, here's where you can look it up, because they didn't want the students to be lazy. But if you would come with a life question, they wouldn't say you should do this, you should do that. They'd say, let me clarify the different, options with you. Let me clarify the ramifications of each option. But you have to take the decision. You can't just be dependent on me. You have to take responsibility for your own decisions. And this is, Rav Soloveitchik actually used to interpret the Mishnah in Avot. The first Mishnah, the second Mishnah in Avot, where it says, Ha'amidu talmidim harbeh, right? The Anshei Knesset Hagdola would say, Ha'amidu talmidim harbeh. Rav Soloveitchik said, make your students stand on their own two feet. That's the goal of an educator. Not that they should be continually dependent on you. Not to have sort of this authoritarian personality of the teacher hovering above the student. And both Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein believed in it, and it was a very empowering message for the students. And both of them invited, just as in Gemara study, we know that there's Rashi and there's Tosfot, and they disagree. And it's not that one was a Talmid Chacham and the other is an Amma Aretz. Chas v'shalom. Both of them were Talmid Chachamim, and they reached different conclusions. And people can legitimately reach different conclusions not just in Gemara, but also in questions of Jewish life and Jewish thought and what to do. And they were interested in opening options. I don't know of any Rosh Yeshiva other than Rav Amital who would get up, would give a speech, and then would invite someone to rebut him.
Right.
And he wouldn't. And Rav Lichtenstein was exactly the same way, always open to different approaches and never imposing his views.
And that was one of the points we made when we were speaking about Rav Amital's life, how he went ahead and literally opened up the floor for anybody who even disagreed, as long as it was done, obviously, in a respectful fashion. And you talk about major issues. You look at Rav Amital's life and the different things he dealt with, you know, before, during, and after the founding of the state. And we're talking about some major issues. We're talking about, you know, things that often divide and often are, you know, divisive topics. And yet, like you say, the harmony of the yeshiva was never compromised, even in those types of situations.
Right. And, you know, both of them also, they had this, you know, obviously this rock-solid commitment to halacha, but they didn't feel that that meant that you had to cut yourself off from the world. They had a great openness to the world. Rav Lichtenstein, very open to the literature and wisdom of the world. Rav Amital also would, and both of them, encourage people to go out into the world, to affect the world, not to build up walls and to barricade ourselves into a corner, but to go out and to have an influence. And Rav Lichtenstein especially is very characterized by, you know, as you said, what he took from his Talmud study he applied to life. In Talmud study, things are complex. They're not black and white. And so he applied that to everything in life. He is very tolerant, very balanced. He has a very balanced and tolerant approach to all issues, and it's had a tremendous effect because people need to hear these voices.
To my point about the Rav one more time, if we were to analyze the percentage of contributors to the Bamidbar Torah Me'etzion that actually heard a shir from the Rav, I assume it would be a very small percentage. Am I right?
Yeah, basically, yeah, maybe
a couple.
Two, three, four. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But most of them are students of a listening to
right.
Rav Amital.
Of course, yeah. Just showing again the Rav's influence even with all that time having passed. And why is I just want to get this in before we conclude. Why is the virtual Beit Midrash such a success? At least to us, Rabbi Ziegler, it appears to be a great success. Maybe you'd want it to be even larger and even more far-reaching. But why has this concept worked? And why are people drinking in the incredible words of Torah of these great scholars? You might think that average people around the world would not be able to relate to the incredible level of scholarship that is presented. Why is it working?
I think that you can point to two reasons. First of all, people today are educated. People today, you know, even if they're in high school, certainly if they're professionals, they're involved with many fields on a high level. And why should their Jewish knowledge or their approach to Judaism be stuck in fifth grade? So people are interested in something that's on the level of that they, you know, so that's the niche that the virtual Beit Midrash fills. It doesn't do vortlach. It doesn't do short things. It says we're going to, you know, there are many, many, many Torah sites that have very fine material, you know, short vort, whatever. There are some that present all sorts of different things. The niche that the virtual Beit Midrash wants to fill is that everything there is in-depth. As we learned from Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Amital, that issues are complex. You can't present them in a black and white, simplistic, soundbite way. You have to present them in all their depth and complexity, and that's what we try to do. Yet, at the same time, we work very hard with our authors and our editors and our translators that the writing should be clear, that the organization should be clear. It's not, you know, something that's only for people with, you know, a PhD in whatever. It should be, you know, the goal is that the average, you know, a layman who's willing to invest the time to sit and read something that requires more than 2 minutes should come out with something. And there's just been, an astonishing success. I mean, people around the world are using it, are teaching from it. I think there's a thirst for real in-depth Torah. And also for the worldview that it presents. As I said, a worldview of openness, a worldview of tolerance, a worldview that you don't have to cut yourself off, a worldview that doesn't try to be negative and narrow, but tries to be broad and embracing. You know, it just every year it goes Mikhail Ohio. I mean, if you look at the website, you'll see dozens of different courses on different topics. And, you know, every year the feedback is tremendous.
Well, I can tell you when the personalities who are affiliated with the Virtual Beit Midrash come to the United States, there's always a buzz. There's always a tremendous amount of enthusiasm when we get to hear them live and in person.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, the internet, it can be used for good or for bad, but you know, it's not just for spreading gossip or for online gambling. It can be used to spread Torah in the most unbelievable way, and it's a tool that can reach. I can tell you letters that we've gotten from people, like, you know, a guy wrote to us once who said, I work on the Alaskan pipeline. You know, the nearest shul is 1,000 kilometers to the south of me. And you are my connection to Torah. And every time we get a letter like that, you know, wow. You know, another person wrote to us, I am one of 3 Jews on a Caribbean island. And, you know, your Torah is what keeps me going. So in fact, we got a letter from all over, from even occasionally from non-Jews who read it. I mean, you don't know who's going to read it. And they also gain something from it. And, you know, there's one high school girl said, she wrote to us that I go to a public high school. I got interested in whatever. And I read one of your shirim, and then I started to read the whole series. And now I keep Shabbat, you know, so what could be more beautiful than that?
You never know. I guess if people search Virtual Beit Midrash, they would find the connection to your site, correct?
Yeah.
Rabbi Reuven Ziegler is chairman of the Koren Editorial Board, close disciple of both Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein. Today we celebrate not just Israel's 66th birthday, but the Pras Yisrael, the Israel Prize being given to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. One of the founders of Yeshivat Haaretzion, and as we said, Rabbi Ziegler, he heads the Israel Koshitsky Virtual Beit Midrash, is an expert in the life and thought of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, and very soon, very, very soon, the brand new Torah Me'etzion on Bamidbar is going to be available to everybody, and you'll have an opportunity to read some of these incredible Magidei Shir, these amazing Torah personalities, as they relate and transmit their thoughts on Sefer Bamidbar. Rabbi Ziegler, cannot thank you enough. Chag Atzmaut Sameach, and thank you so much for joining us and for really shedding some light on an incredible man and the incredible spotlight that he has had on the study of Torah throughout the world. Thank you for joining us.
Chag Atzmaut Sameach, and look forward to more volumes on Tanakh by Yeshivat Haaretzion, published by Magid. A whole bunch are about to come out.
Oh, phenomenal. That is phenomenal. Let us know. We love discussing them on the air. Our thanks, Rabbi Ziegler. Koren Publishers has a Yom HaAtzmaut sale going on. Up to 66% savings on the entire website in celebration of Israel's 66th birthday all the way until Wednesday, May 7th. So make sure to take advantage now. The offer is good while supplies last. Discounts on the entire website, including the Koren Talmud Bavli, the Koren Sack Siddur, the Magid books, and many, many more. Restrictions do apply. Check out korenpub.com, korenpub.com for information. And you can relive history with Ambassador Yehuda Avner. Purchase The Prime Minister's An Intimate Narrative of Israeli Leadership by Yehuda Avner for just $19.48, plus free shipping. You can enter to win in their raffle, a complimentary dinner with Yehuda Avner. Check out the Koren Facebook page for more details, or go to korenpub.com, korenpub.com. You've been listening to Buy the Book here at the Nachum Segal Network in its original form on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Today we have an opportunity to celebrate the Yom HaAtzmaut, and today we've had an opportunity to speak with Rabbi Ziegler about the brand new Torah Me'etzion by Midbar and about the incredible life that's being recognized by the State of Israel or of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. He should continue to flourish in his role as Rosh HaYeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion. My name is Nachum Segal, and you're listening to the Nachum Segal Network.
Thank you.